Bucket took out his wallet and showed me a picture of a dribbling infant that looked like every other dribbling infant I had ever seen. I'm married now, so Tamworth knows I can't stay. One's needs change, you know?
Good-looking kid.
Thank you. He put the picture away. You married?
Not for want of trying, I replied as I filled the kettle.
Bucket nodded and brought out a copy of Fast Horse. Do you ever flutter on the Gee-Gees? I've had an unusual tip on Malabar.
I don't. Sorry.
Bucket nodded. His conversation had pretty much dried up. I brought in some coffee a few minutes later. Snood and Bucket were discussing the outcome of the Cheltenham Gold Stakes handicap.
So you know what he looks like, Miss Next?
Asked the ancient Snood, without looking up from the binoculars.
He was a lecturer of mine when I was at college. He's tricky to describe, though.
Average build?
When I last saw him.
Tall?
At least 6'6".
Black hair worn swept back and greying at the temples?
Bucket and I looked at one another.
Yes?
I think he's over there, Thursday.
I jerked the headphone jack out.
Acheron,
came Stick's voice over the loudspeaker.
Dear brother, what a pleasant surprise.
I looked through the binoculars and could see Acheron in the flat with Sticks. He was dressed in a large grey duster jacket and was exactly how I remembered him from all those years ago. It didn't seem as though he had aged even one day. I shivered involuntarily.
Shit, I muttered.
Snood had already dialed the pager number to alert Tamworth.
Mosquitoes have stung the blue goat, he murmured down the phone.
Thank you. Can you repeat that back and send it twice?
My heart beat faster. Acheron might not stay long, and I was in a position for advancement beyond the Literatex for good. Capturing Hades would be something no one could ever ignore.
I'm going over there,
I said almost casually.
What?
You heard. Stay here and call SO14 for armed backup, silent approach. Tell them we've gone in and to surround the building. Suspect will be armed and highly dangerous. Got it? Snood smiled in the manner that I had so liked in his son and reached for the telephone. I turned to Bucket.
You with me?
Bucket had turned a little pale.
I'm with you,
he replied slightly shakily. I flew out of the door, down the stairs and into the lobby.
Next!
It was Bucket. He had stopped and was visibly shaking.
What is it?
I can't do this,
he announced, loosening his tie and rubbing the back of his neck.
I have the kid. You don't know what he can do. I'm a betting man next. I love long odds. But we try and take him and we're both dead. I beg you, wait for SO14.
He could be long gone by then. All we have to do is detain him.
Bucket bit his lip, but the man was terrified. He shook his head and beat a hasty retreat without another word. It was unnerving, to say the least. I thought of shouting after him, but remembered the picture of the dribbling kid. I pulled out my automatic, pushed open the door to the street, and walked slowly across the road to the building opposite. As I did so, Tamworth drew up in his car. He didn't look very happy.
What the hell are you doing?
Pursuing the suspect.
No, you're not. Where's Bucket?
On his way home.
I don't blame him. SO14 on their way?
I nodded. He paused, looked up at the dark building, and then at me.
Shit. Okay, stay behind and stay sharp. Shoot first, then question. Below the 8.
Above the law. I remember.
Good.
Tamworth pulled out his gun, and we stepped cautiously into the lobby of the converted warehouse. Styx's flat was on the 7th floor. Surprise, hopefully, would be on our side. Chapter 5. Search for the Guilty, Punish the Innocent. Perhaps it was as well that she had been unconscious for 4 weeks. She had missed the aftermath, the SO1 reports, the recriminations, Snood and Tamworth's funerals. She missed everything, except the blame. It was waiting for her when she awoke. Milan de Flos, Thursday next, a biography. I tried to focus on the strip light above me. I knew that something had happened, but the night when Tamworth and I tackled Acheron Hades had, for the moment at least, been erased from my mind. I frowned, but only fractured images paraded themselves in my consciousness. I remembered shooting a little old lady 3 times and running down a fire escape. I had a dim recollection of blasting away at my own car and being shot in the arm. I looked at my arm, and it was indeed tightly bound with a white bandage. Then I remembered being shot again, in the chest. I breathed in and out a couple of times, and was relieved that no crackly rasp reached my ears. There was a nurse in the room who said a few words I couldn't decipher, and smiled. I thought it odd, and then lapsed once again into grateful slumber. The next time I awoke, it was evening, and the room seemed colder. I was alone in a single hospital ward with 7 empty beds. Just outside the door, I could see an armed police officer on guard duty, while inside a vast quantity of flowers and cards vied for space. As I lay in bed, the memories of the evening returned and tumbled out of my subconscious. I resisted them as long as I could, but it was like holding back a flood. Everything that had happened that night came back in an instant, and as I remembered, I wept. Within a week I was strong enough to get out of bed. Page and Boswell had both dropped by, and even my mother had made the trip up from Swindon to see me. She told me she had painted the bedroom mauve, much to Dad's disappointment, and it was my fault for suggesting it. I didn't think I'd bother trying to explain. I was glad of any sympathy, of course, but my mind was elsewhere. There had been a monumental fiasco, and someone was going to be responsible. And as the sole survivor of that disastrous evening, I was the strongest and only candidate. A small office was procured in the hospital, and into it came Tamworth's old divisional commander, a man whom I had never met named Flanker, who seemed utterly devoid of humour and warmth. He brought with him a twin cassette tape deck and several SO1 senior operatives who declined to give their names. I gave my testimony slowly and frankly, without emotion and as accurately as possible. Acheron's strange powers had been hinted at before, but even so, Flanker was having trouble believing it.
"I've read Tamworth's file on Hades, and it makes pretty weird reading, Miss Next," he said. "Tamworth was a bit of a loose cannon. SO5 was his and his alone. Hades was more of an obsession than a job. From our initial inquiries, it seems that he has been flaunting basic Spec Ops guidelines. Contrary to popular belief, we are accountable to Parliament, albeit on a very discreet basis."
He paused for a moment and consulted his notes. He looked at me and switched on the tape recorder. He identified the tape with the date, his name and mine, but only referred to the other operatives by numbers. That done, he drew up a chair and sat down.
"So what happened?"
I paused for a moment, and then began, giving the story of my meeting with Tamworth right up until Bucket's hasty departure.
"I'm glad that someone seemed to have some sense," murmured one of the SO1 agents. I ignored him.
"Tamworth and I entered the lobby of Styx's property," I told them. "We took the stairs, and on the 6th floor we heard the shot. We stopped and listened, but there was complete silence. Tamworth thought we'd been rumbled."
"You had been rumbled," announced Flanker. "From the transcript of the tape, we know that Snood spoke Hades' name out loud. Hades picked it up and reacted badly. He accused Styx of betraying him, retrieved the package, and then killed his brother. Your surprise attack was no surprise. He knew you were both there."
I took a sip of water. "If we had known, would we have retreated?" I doubted it.
"Who was in front?"
"Tamworth. We edged slowly round the stairwell and looked onto the 7th floor landing. It was empty apart from a little old lady who was facing the lift doors and muttering angrily to herself. Tamworth and I edged closer to Styx's open door and peered in. Styx was lying on the floor, and we quickly searched the small flat."
"We saw you on the surveillance video next," said one of the nameless operatives. "Your search was conducted well."
"Did you see Hades on the video?"
The same man coughed. They had been having trouble coming to terms with Tamworth's report, but the video was unequivocal. Hades' likeness had not shown up on it at all, just his voice.
No, he said finally. No, we did not.
Tamworth cursed and walked back to the door, I continued. It was then that I heard another shot. I stopped for a moment, remembering the event carefully, yet not fully understanding what I had seen and felt. I remembered that my heart rate had dropped. Everything had suddenly become crystal clear. I had felt no panic, just an overwhelming desire to see the job completed. I had seen Tamworth die, but had felt no emotion. That was to come later.
"Miss Next?"
asked Flanker, interrupting my thoughts.
"What?
Sorry. Tamworth was hit. I walked over, but a quick glance confirmed that the wound was incompatible with survival. I had to assume Hades was on the landing, so I took a deep breath and glanced out.
What did you see?
I saw the little old lady standing by the lift. I had heard no one run off downstairs, so assumed Hades was on the roof. I glanced out again. The old lady gave up waiting and walked past me on her way to the stairs, splashing through a puddle of water on the way. She tut-tutted as she passed Tamworth's body. I switched my attention back to the landing and to the stairwell that led to the roof. As I walked slowly towards the roof access, a doubt crept into my mind. I turned back to look at the little old lady, who had started off down the stairs and was grumbling about the infrequency of trams. Her footprints from the water caught my eye. Despite her small feet, the wet footprints were made by a man-sized shoe. I required no more proof. It was rule number two. Acheron could lie in thought, deed, action, and appearance. For the first time ever, I fired a gun in anger. There was silence, so I continued. I saw at least three of the four shots hit the lumbering figure on the stairs. The old lady, or at the very least her image, tumbled out of sight, and I walked cautiously up to the head of the stairwell. Her belongings were strewn all the way down the concrete steps, with her shopping trolley on the landing below. Her groceries had spilt out, and several cans of cat food were rolling slowly down the steps.
So you hit her?
Definitely. Flanker dug a small evidence bag out of his pocket and showed it to me. It contained three of my slugs, flattened as though they had been fired into the side of a tank. When Flanker spoke again, his voice was edged with disbelief.
You say that Acheron disguised himself as an old lady?
Yes, sir, I replied, looking straight ahead.
How did he do that?
I don't know, sir.
How could a man over 6'6" dress in a small woman's clothes?
I don't think he did it physically. I think he just projected what he wanted me to see.
That sounds crazy.
There's a lot we don't know about Hades.
That I can agree with. The old lady's name was Mrs. Grimswold. We found her wedged up the chimney in Styx's apartment. It took three men to pull her out.
Flanker thought for a moment and let one of the other men ask a question.
"I'm interested to know why you were both armed with expanding ammunition," said one of the other officers, not looking at me but at the wall. He was short and dark and had an annoying twitch in his left eye.
"Fluted hollow points and high power loads. What were you planning to shoot, buffalo?"
I took a deep breath.
"Hades was shot six times without any ill effects in 77, sir. Tamworth gave us expanded ammunition to use against him. He said he had SO1 approval."
"Well, he didn't. If the papers get hold of this, there'll be hell to pay. Spec Ops doesn't have a good relationship with the press, Miss Next. The Mole keeps on wanting access for one of its journalists. In this climate of accountability, the politicians are leaning on us more and more. Expanding ammunition. Shit, not even the special cavalry use those on the Russians."
"That's what I said," I countered. "But having seen the state of these," I shook the bag of flattened slugs, "I can see that Tamworth showed considerable restraint. We should have been carrying armour-piercing."
"Don't even think about it."
We had a break then. Flanker and the others vanished into the next room to argue while a nurse changed the dressing on my arm. I had been lucky. There had been no infection. I was thinking about Snood when they returned to resume the interview.
As I walked carefully down the stairwell, it was apparent that Acheron was now unarmed, I continued.